Tont's Daman Clues, Reel 4.
Now, of course, I nearly forgot. I'm afraid I have to go back a little bit in the late 40s. My brother came home one day, and everything, of course, by then was rationed. We all had ration cards, his suit was ration card, and everything was very well organized by the Germans, because if I must say, they were excellent organizers. Everything was worked out and thought out long before that. And he came home and he said to my mother, "Mum, have you got any spare food?" Well, whatever spare food we had, my parents' savings started diminishing, whatever they had, in buying for a black market just to keep us and to keep the boys. Because in the end, I mean, not everybody, because everybody wasn't allowed to come at home, but enough. Far more than you should have gone, came at home very hungry. And she says, why? Well, he says, we got 28. Now, excuse me for altering that, but I said in the 20 in the beginning. And the reason I know now it was 28 was when in 85, my husband and I were invited to Canada by the Canadian government and the Escaping Society. And there I met a lady called Brusselmans. And I worked with her during the war. And she was what they called a CAS, which was the money keeper, in other words. And I hadn't met her since during the war, when I used to go to Brussels on occasion. So there I met her. And I was talking about this to some of my lads. I still call them my lads. They're all older than I am, but they're still my lads, my boys. And somebody was taking a recorder of it all. And I said, well, I don't know, there was about 20 of them. And Anne said, 28. And I was amazed. And I said, why? She says, because I know I've got it on paper.
These would have been servicemen who were escaping, were they?
Yes. I went on the escape route. Yeah. And I have got proof of it, because she did give me the copy of and two of my lads are on this particular paper. Yeah. And there is on, don't ask me why, because I still don't know, and nobody seems to know. Different sums of money that was given to different persons. I don't know why one got more than the other. If they knew now, they would want to know as well. Some would have 1,000 francs and some would have only 700 francs, which incidentally was a lot of money then. But that's what they were given. And it all had to go down, you know, it all had to be proofed after the war.
But yeah. You were going to do the food, were you? You were going to help with the food.
And she said, so that put it out, so it was 28. That's how I come to know it was 28, officially. So my mum says, well, I can see what I can do. And she got in touch with all the butchers and all her friends, and one gave this and one gave that. And She didn't say, oh, but they got a pretty good idea. They were all very much trusted friends, hopefully. One was a very good supplier of marrow bones. The old-fashioned way my grandmother used to say, if you want the flu, have some marrow bone soup, it will make you strong. So they were put in by the comrades in the Bedouins in the monastery, and I was a strict order. And my brother had come to him there, 28 men. And the nuns never knew, there was only two nuns, Mother Superior and another nun, I suppose, the one under there, that knew about it. And they were put in the roof, underneath the eaves. And of course, that's an order where not even a woman is allowed in, which is no man allowed in. And they walk with a hood over there, you know. Should be down here, but still. And I used to take the food there every day. I never took it. And one day, Mother Spirit says to me, oh, Otters, please, don't bring it. Even three times a week. She says, once a week is enough. She says, we don't know where to bury the bones anymore. And it was only years afterwards when I now and then and Rotary or so had asked me to give a little talk. And all of a sudden, it depends what, I never have notes with me, it depends what comes to me, what moment I remember. And I remembered all of a sudden, they were doing some excavation there. And rebuilding. And all of a sudden, for some reason or other, that picture came in my mind. And I thought, well, I must have a look in the papers in case they discovered all those bones and wonder where those bones have come from. And I thought, well, I can positively swear that they are animal bones.
Was that risky, though, you know, taking the food in?
Oh, it wouldn't mean that. It wouldn't mean that to all those nuns.
Were you ever stopped? Were you ever accosted by the Germans doing it?
Oh, I was stopped in different routines, the same as anybody else. Luckily, I was very fortunate. But on a couple of occasions I was stopped when I had some very dangerous things on me. She just dragged 24 hand grenades in a basket. And there was a big search on. But that's later on when by the time I joined in the party then. This was the British they were boys that didn't make it in Dunkirk. Some that were in the Navy, Army, and some Air Force, but not as many Air Force, of course, that were picked up either en route to Germany. Also some that didn't make it at all and that were picked up in a farm or not farm, and that eventually, and they'd collected them in Brussels, you see. And they didn't know what to do with them. I mean, it's an awful lot of money to hide under, you know, especially so early. And it's all right, like people talking, but you know, when it comes to the point, you soon back away. That's another thing you're very much aware of. So my brother brought, and another man, who was only two, that brought those 28 to remain.
And did they get away?
All of them, and they all came back, and I don't know one of them names. But I do know, it was early, I do know it was in the north of France, on the coast, and they might, I suppose, they were picked up, but which was impossible afterwards. But then it was still possible. It was still, and that was very much arranged. The British, the Belgian Legion, you see, and I suppose the Belgian government and so forth, in those days, they all came back. Now, that was a very rewarding achievement, shall I say.
Were you getting any idea of sort of German methods at this time? You know, how people were being treated when they were captured?
Well, we as time went on, we decided, my brother decided, to join a very small band. Well, actually, they started off with only about five. If the Germans would have known, they wouldn't have been so frightened. They thought we were a big army. But the five important people, all very, very strong individually. None of those five were ever caught, although their heads were all on posters, 500,000 francs that are alive.
Could you tell me their names?
Yes, there was my brother, Pierre Armand, which was also one of the leaders, Louis van Brusselen, Yves-Jean van der Stappe, the Becker, and those are five. But later on, even they became more the leaders, you see. And in 42, they definitely, underneath, I don't know how they do it because I wasn't there, but it became the partisan, the Belgian partisan army, Corps 34. By then, of course, they had learned quite a bit. Still, as ever, short of ammunition. Because for some reason or other, unfortunately, and I must say that, we had a lot of people with us in this country, but there only had to be one or two that was biased. And although we were promised so many times, I suppose, well, it's old news now, it's known, that we were going to get the benefit of drops of ammunition supplies. We only had one. It always fell in somebody else's hands. It annoys me, and it still does. At one time, if there were a lot of brave people that were great helpers, helpers. There is a difference between a helper and an active member, right? Some innocent people think they should all be members, but no, there is a difference. We couldn't have done without the helpers. As far as information, as far as money support goes, and most importantly, about information about the ins and outs of certain supplies that was coming in, because we had to survive and robbing on actions in broad daylight in the middle of the city. If anybody can imagine what these young men were risking. They're surrounded by Germans, armed to the police. These are booby traps. And it was through sheer guts and determination that they survived the survival there. It was also in Louvain that that very famous where we were commended, well, thanked or praised by Sir Winston Churchill on the radio, blowing up the train, which 238 officers died. I mean, that's not anything to be proud of. A German officer. But it was an achievement. And they were going to the Eastern Front. So that was war, unfortunately. Now, in between all this, of course, we all had our moments where it's of no avail and of no importance to anybody else who we worked for and who the names are. In certain places it is known, so that's, you know, that's as far. These people aren't here anymore to defend themselves, and I can't see why they should be put on if they're not there to say, yes, that's right. The places where they should know, they do know. So I won't mention any names here. But I do know that we worked for different organisations. Now, somebody came and said, where's the prison in behind us? As I told him in the beginning. We had a connection with all. We also knew a little bit. Now, I'm not speaking now how the law or whatever is today. I don't know. I've been here for 50 years. Next month is 50 years. So I don't know the ins and outs of the laws now. But at one time, the prison, the central prison in Louvain, was where when they came in there, the majority of them were condemned to death because we didn't have the death sentence in Belgium. And when you were condemned to death, you was dwang at a bed, which means hard labour. From the moment you were sentenced, you were dead. And when you died, whatever years it was, you died in prison. And you were buried in an unknown grave. Nobody, none of your family or anybody was told where that grave is, you see. Now that was, we knew, because of the war and all that and our connections. Now, the Germans had their own headquarters. They had their Gestapos, and they had their different Gestapo houses, and they had their commandanteurs and all that. Now, also different people, when they were arrested, were interviewed in different things. This particular day, the commissaire, from which were usually a retired policeman, or something, that became a commissaire of a cemetery. They had to be a professional. You see, that again doesn't work here like that, you see. So, they had quite a good education. he came up in it, I mean, we knew him because it was only a few yards, his house, and he lived Spivey Town, you see, down the cemetery. And he came over and he said, and he was in a real situation. In many cases, the Germans had buried a body which had come from the prison. And he couldn't understand, but it wasn't accepted at the prison. In any case, eventually we knew it had come from the German Gestapo, the SS Gestapo, Sicherheitsdienst. In that quarter, which was most unusually, that they closed, he had the information, closed the gates, nobody in, nobody allowed in. You know, which was a sort of a big puzzle. Well, he also knew that they buried it. By the time the years, right, during the war or later on, probably. Now they don't bury in prisons anymore because so probably they did come and bury on the cemetery on the quiet. But this was an unusual situation. It took a long time for him to explain that the same was but in any case my brother came and we never knew when he came in, but he used to come quite often and get some news. And my mother told me about it, that told him and he straight away got going, my mother got going somewhere else, and in any case it was organised very quickly, because everything had to be done quickly. But the most principal part was, although there were men, members of the Protestants there, it was not it was not the organisation of that, right? It was from another division. So there was the pathologist, a very well known man, that helped an awful lot in also doing some very odd jobs in when people were wounded, you know. And the priest. A priest, not the priest from the Sinai, but one of the Benedictine. Also, within the organization, an awful lot of those priests, you know, that were members. And of course, I've got. I asked if he could go, well, there was sort of a point, but I think my brother must have thought, well, she probably was shaking a little bit, but, you know, it did shake me, but I think I wasn't the only one that was shaking either. But that was the day I decided, you know.
What happened? Could you tell me what happened?
We never knew his name. I do know that he's buried in in the big military cemetery in Avery.
Was he actually exhumed then? You haven't.
Yes,
if you could explain what happened that night.
Well, the commissar, of course, spoke to my brother and he explained what had happened. And he didn't know who it was, but he'd watched. He watched the German bury this right to the other end of the cemetery, you see. That's what he came and reported. So, of course, my brother organized and there was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, my mum, went up there, and in the dark, and it had to be done quick in case they came back and they would see the difference in the disturbance of the soil. And of course, yes, we found that he wasn't wrapped, not even in a cloth. He got his uniform and his jumper. He put his boots on, believe it or not. His flying boots. How he got it on, I don't know, because he hadn't got a bone in his body that hadn't been broken. His eyes were there, they were just a mush. And yet he must have been a nice looking lad. I'm glad really I never knew his name. And if I would have done, I would have taken that to my grave. Because I wouldn't have want their parents or loved ones to know. And I swore that day I'll never rest till I see them leave, crawl back to Germany. Unfortunately, I didn't go to the end when I was captured, but still. It was, at least we buried it, he may not have been a Catholic, it was a Roman Catholic priest that, he said the prayers, but at least he was buried with everything was covered up properly and buried in another spot. So if the Germans came back, they wouldn't have found his body. But they did come back and look at the ground. And they didn't think it was disturbed, you see, because it was so quick. So they left it. And of course, it overgrew a stone in town. But it was already moved to another spot. We couldn't get hold of him. He was wrapped up quite securely. And he was washed. And bandaged. And after the war, even before we came back from the camp, I presume it was my brother who said where he was laying, and they got a very beautiful cemetery just outside the lane, and he lay with the unknown soldier, known unto God, you know. So I think that's, you know, a proper place for them. I can't forget that lad. When he said it must have grown overnight. I thought he couldn't have had to. But somebody made a remark that your hair grows, I don't know. But his hair seemed, if it was all hair, jet black. It seemed if it was grown nearly as long as a woman. Does it grow? Does your hair grow? Are you dead?
Mine grows.
You're not dead yet.